Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts with a look at California agricultural news. A once-in-a-generation downturn in a wine market is reshaping California's grape-growing regions as farmers tear out vines to rebalance supply with declining demand. Throughout this winter, bulldozers have plowed through Lodi's wine country, leveling vineyards and piling vines in mangled heaps on either side of Highway 99 in San Joaquin County. Thousands of acres in the region have been removed or are slated for removal, according to an ongoing survey of its members by the Lodi District Grape Growers Association. California pistachio growers are searching the globe for potential emerging markets to handle expected record-shattering crops during the next few years. A market outlook for the surging pistachio sector was offered at the American Pistachio Growers Annual Conference recently in Monterey. Pistachio shipments to Europe, Asia, Canada, and Mexico allowed the sector to avoid overproduction with a 2023 crop that approached 1.5 billion pounds. Pistachio harvests are expected to grow exponentially as non-bearing acreage comes into production. A second contractor of hybrid sunflower seed production has pulled out of California in as many years, sending growers scrambling to find new seed production contracts or replacement crops. Earlier this year, Syngenta told growers it was shutting down its California hybrid sunflower planting seed program and would no longer be contracting the crop. The company planned to close its Hamilton City seed processing facility after finishing the 2023 crop. Last year, Pioneer Hybrid International Incorporated closed its Woodland commercial seed lab. Monterey Mushrooms is cultivating more than a meal. They're nurturing a sustainable future. This spring, the company will be making a significant change to enhance the recyclability of its mushroom packaging by incorporating near-infrared sortable material into their recycled tills. The company's tills are produced using 100% post-consumer recycled materials sourced entirely from North America. This means the material used in the tills has already had a prior life, thus reducing plastic waste in landfills and contributing to a circular economy. The use of sortable colorant ensures that the packaging can be properly sorted and recycled into new products. By using this new technology, the mushroom industry can give multiple lives to mixed color recycled plastic materials. Plastic materials with the NIR sortable colorant can potentially provide long-term cost advantages compared to other colors, including clear plastic. In the 1980s, Monterey Mushrooms revolutionized the retail industry by introducing prepackaged mushrooms, according to Bruce Nobelock, Vice President of Product Development and Marketing. He said since then, the mushroom industry has been repurposing colored plastic. The company considers its tills with the NIR sortable colorant as a black alternative color. The hue will vary between blue, green, purple, black, and etc. as the recycled base material used to manufacture the tills will change. The recycling rate in the United States is 29%, and the recycling rate in North America as a whole is 37.8%. Recycling centers play a vital role in transforming plastic waste into reusable materials. However, the sorting and processing of plastics can be challenging due to variations in composition and color. There's a lot of confusion out there among consumers about what can be recycled. All plastics can be recycled, but the problem is the nation does not have the infrastructure to do so. The amount of plastic waste in the U.S. has increased tenfold since the 1970s, leading to overflowing landfills and ocean pollution, while recycling rates have remained low. The California avocado industry is gearing up for a great season, with the California Avocado Commission forecasting 208 million pounds to be produced by the Golden State in the 2024 to 2025 season. Terry Splain, the California Avocado Commission Vice President of Marketing, says that abundant rains have provided a boost in production, and he expects more favorable weather to come. The rain gives the energy to the fruit, and they've lacked a little bit of rain in the last year, which is why the crop was down. He says the rain is what gives energy to the fruit, and they lacked a little bit of rain last year, which is why the crop was down. The sector has experienced fluctuating growth in the past decade. While productive acres decreased by 17% from 2012 to 2022, the crop value has increased by almost 12%, according to a 2022 CAC report. California avocados remain mostly at home, as the state's 30 million plus people make up for approximately 50% of the crop's final consumers. Haas avocados represent roughly 95% of production in California. Current field quotes for conventional Haas range from a high of $1.36 for a size 32 fruit to a low of 43 cents for a size 84 fruit. The gem variety, however, shows great promise to supplement the market, according to Splain. He said the smaller, thicker skin fruit is less susceptible to wind damage and is also high yielding. This year, they're projecting about 5 million pounds of gem. So in 1 year, that's more than doubled, he said. The fruit is protected inside a canopy, and it also uses less water, so there are some sustainability practices that are associated with it. In California, natural and working lands make up 95 million acres of the state and play a vital role in building resilience to the impacts of climate change. University of California Agricultural and Natural Resources was awarded $1.7 million for the California Next Generation and Equitable Climate Action Plan as part of the state's Natural and Working Lands Climate Smart Strategy and California's 30 by 30 initiative, an effort to conserve 30% of the state's lands and coastal waters by the year 2030. Natural and working lands include both unmanaged and managed areas actively used for agriculture, forestry, or production purposes. Chandra Richards, UC Cooperative Extension Agricultural Land Acquisitions Academic Coordinator for Southern California, and Christina Murillo Barrick, UCCE's Black Indigenous and People of Color Community Development Advisor for the Bay Area, are leading a California Next Generation and Equitable Climate Action Plan project. To build capacity and technical assistance for climate smart action planning, Richards and Murillo Barrick will use the Climate Smart Land Management Program funding awarded through the California Department of Conservation to focus on two of the most pressing climate action issues, which are equitable land access and land management diversification. According to the 2022 U.S. Department of Agriculture Census, demographic data indicates that California agricultural land ownership and production is concentrated within an aging and mostly white demographic. However, research suggests diverse management practices promote healthy landscapes. This has been shown to benefit the environment, human health, and climate resilience in multiple ways. For this reason, this project centers on historically underrepresented communities, a term that includes California Native American tribes, communities of color, landless farmers, immigrant, and non-English-speaking communities, and other agency-designated minority groups. Focusing on Southern California, UC Cooperative Extension scientists will identify barriers to land access, management, and opportunities to increase land manager diversity. They will also engage historically underrepresented communities in coalition building, capacity assessment, and climate action planning. Within the last few decades, Californians have faced increased ecosystem stressors and decreasing diversity of natural systems. This pattern continues to damage already vulnerable communities while also worsening and intensifying climate impacts, including drought, wildfire, flooding, and disease. Overcoming these kinds of systemic and structural challenges will require the next generation of land managers to reflect California equitably while preparing them to take on climate resilience. The project will determine clear solutions and plans that enable long-term strategic land use and protection. To do this work, UCC is collaborating with the Community Alliance with Family Farms, California Association of Resource Conservation Districts, and the California Bountiful Foundation, all of whom serve as subgrantees and will deepen connections within communities.
Friday, March 8th is International Women's Day, celebrating the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women globally. Recognizing the significant role that women play in the ag industry, My Ag Life spoke with two women who are making their mark in the ag world. The two work for Columbia Grain International, the leading supplier of bulk grain, pulses, edible beans, and oil seeds, both conventional and organic, worldwide. Cassie Steele, a grain buyer who grew up in agriculture, reflects positively on her experiences working in a male-dominated field.
My dad taught me to run all kinds of machinery, and there wasn't a vehicle I couldn't operate either. Like, I drove semis, combines, tractors, and I learned how to change tires, change oil, a lot of stuff. I'm fast. I learn fast, learn with my hands. Most of it's been pretty good.
Steele worked her way up at Columbia Grain, starting as a warehouse operator. She says she sees women in an increasing number of powerful positions in agriculture.
Women are starting to get more involved in everything, so I think that's kind of cool. There's quite a few women that are going up into, you know, more powerful roles, so really, they might be taking over one day.
Mackenzie Johnson is a grain and pulses buyer for Columbia Grain. While she didn't grow up in farming, she began immersing herself in it during high school when she joined the FFA. She says eventually she took on a number of ag jobs before becoming a grain buyer, including hog farming, agronomy, and banking. but it was her time job shadowing at a large and small animal veterinary office that she says gave her a glimpse into what it would be like to be a woman working in agriculture.
I mostly was in helping on the large animal side of things. So that's kind of where I really got a feel of what it's like to be a woman in agriculture, and really just got a taste of how the people are. And so that's kind of really what drew me to being in agriculture. And that's what led me to going to school, pursuing a degree in agriculture. So I've gotten to experience all sorts of things, and each of those opportunities have presented, you know, different challenges, but they've also taught me a lot that's led to the success and to where I'm at now.
Johnson said she's had great mentors who have encouraged and supported her along the way, and plans to pay it forward by doing the same for the next generation of women in agriculture.
Being a role model and mentor to the younger generation of women, and show them that this is an inclusive industry where you can be very successful and you can have a lifelong and impactful career in. So it's not limited to anyone. It can be intimidating as a woman in agriculture. I mean, it is very male dominant, but it doesn't mean that it's not inclusive. I love it personally. We have manager meetings where there's 50 men in the room and I might be the only woman. So it's kind of, but it's also really empowering. And I hope it's something that I can share with others and hope that, you know, they can follow those footsteps too. And they don't have to be afraid of it. Women's involvement in agriculture, it just continues to be really essential in addressing complex challenges that modern agriculture is facing.
For My Ag Life, this is Kristen Platts.
A Zespri Commission survey of over 500 Singapore residents showed an overwhelming majority want to eat more fruits, but over one-third do not because they simply forget. Zespri understands that integrating healthier eating choices into daily routines can be challenging, and inspired by pill boxes that remind people to take their medicine and supplements daily, Zespri just launched the first fruit pill box. It's a limited edition packaging designed to encourage consumers to eat kiwi fruit daily. The fruit pill box features 7 compartments labeled Monday through Sunday, each containing a Zespri Sungold kiwi fruit. This design is inspired by Nudge Theory, offering reminders for healthier choices. The fruit pill box leverages the concept of routine and habit by providing a structured and visually appealing format that literally looks like a pill organizer. The segmentation of kiwi fruit into individual compartments for each day of the week acts as a clear and tangible cue for people to incorporate kiwi fruit consumption into their daily routine, according to a company official. Purdue University has released the results for the 2024 Ag Economy Barometer. Jim Mintert is director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Ag, and he has a breakdown of the latest results.
The Ag Economy Barometer Index rose 5 points this month compared to a month earlier, but that left the index 14 points below where it was this time last year. The Current Condition Index was unchanged compared to last month, but it is down 31 points compared to February of 2023. And the Future Expectation Index was actually up 7 points compared to last month, but it remains 6 points lower than it was a year ago. The Farm Financial Performance Index reading of 84 was down 1 point compared to a month ago, and 2 points lower than a year ago, but the index remains well below its peak of last fall when it hit a level of 97. Once again, in this month's survey, we asked producers what their biggest concerns are for their farming operation in the upcoming year. And the top concern remains higher input costs, chosen by 34% of this month's respondents. But 28% of the respondents this month chose lower crop and or livestock prices. That's up from 18% who chose that a year ago. The Farm Capital Investment Index reading of 34 was 1 point below a month ago and was 9 points lower than it was this time last year. When we followed up and asked producers who said it's a bad time to make large investments in their farming operation why they felt that way, there's been a bit of a change. Rising interest rates was the number one reason cited by farmers, but uncertainty about profitability is up sharply compared to responses we received last fall. Producers' perspective on farmland values in the upcoming year were unchanged this month. The short-term index was unchanged from a month earlier, but was down 4 points compared to a year ago, with this month's reading of 115. Once again, this month's survey asked producers about lease rates for solar energy production on their farms. and it's become clear that lease rates are rising over time. The first time we asked this question, just 27% of producers said they were offered a lease rate of over $1,000 an acre. In this month's survey, over half, 56% of producers in the survey, said they were offered a lease rate of over $1,000 per acre. That wraps up the highlights for this month's survey. You can get the full report on our website, purdue.edu/agbarometer. And you can also get some more details available on our podcast, the Purdue Commercial AgCast, which is available on our website at purdue.edu/commercialag, as well as all the major podcast providers. On behalf of the Center for Commercial Agriculture, I'm Jim Mintert. Thanks for joining us.
At the recent Commodity Classic event in Houston, Texas, USDA Secretary of Agriculture Dan Vilsack spoke at the general session, and he addressed the issue of inputs.
We are cognizant of the challenges that you face there. We've spent a considerable amount of time looking at the challenge that fertilizer provides for all producers. The president directed us to put together a program to begin the process of more domestic production of fertilizer to help increase supply, reduce our reliance on foreign sources. To date, we've funded 40 projects in 25 states to expand access to the fertilizer supply, to also create more other alternatives, to provide the technology that will allow farmers to better understand what needs to be fertilized and how much, creating more capacity and greater infrastructure.
He announced a new USDA project.
Today, we're adding to that number by announcing yet another project in Florida, a $3.9 million grant to a company that's going to boost the production of phosphate fertilizer, understanding and appreciating that this will add tens of thousands of additional product to the marketplace, which in turn has added, with our recent awards, millions of tons of additional supply, which is one of the reasons why fertilizer costs have moderated a bit. We're not finished. There will be many, many more announcements in this area, but I want you to know that we're focused on trying to help reduce the costs and availability, increase the availability of fertilizer.
This year's Commodity Classic was a record breaker, bringing in 11,000 registered attendees. Agriculture and fuel interests are asking the Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Michael Regan to reject a petition by CVR Energy to change a biofuels credit trading program in a renewable fuel standard in a letter to the EPA recently. Back in December, David L. Lamp, the president and CEO of Coffeyville Resources Refining and Marketing LLC and Wynwood Refining Company LLC, asked EPA to conduct a rulemaking to change the way the Renewable Identification Numbers, or RINs, program is implemented. Lamp told the agency it had unlawfully created a RIN trading program that has led to gross market manipulation that causes RIN prices to skyrocket from pennies at the outset of the program to more than $2 in 2022. The two petitioning companies are owned by energy giant CVR Energy. Lamp said EPA was required by the Clean Air Act to develop a credit program for which RINs could be generated only by obligated parties that produced more RINs than they needed and could transfer RINs to other obligated parties. In a letter, the group cited the petitioner's request is untimely as the rules targeted by the petition were issued more than a decade ago and no new circumstances have arisen that will give rise to EPA reviewing these regulations, and EPA has taken no actions to reopen the rulemaking process on its own. The 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act significantly changed federal individual income and estate tax policies, though some were temporary. In 2018, the legislation increased the estate tax exemption amount from $5.49 million to $11.18 million. This increase is set to expire at the end of 2025. The exclusion amount will revert in 2026 to $6.98 million per deceased person. Researchers with USDA's Economic Research Service estimate the expiring increased exemption would be at $13.95 million per person at the time of the expiration. Lowering the tax exemption level in 2026 is estimated to increase the percentage of farm operator estates taxed from 0.3 to 1.0. Large farms would experience the largest increase in the share of estates owing estate tax, increasing from 2.8 to 7.3%. Total federal estate taxes for farm estates would be expected to be more than double at $1.2 billion if the provision were allowed to expire.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.